Recording. Making units on the meter. Units on the meter. Woofer.
Tweeter.
Rolling. Roll it, pat it, prick it, mark it with the B. Put it in the oven for baby and me.
Yeah, you ever been to Winco?
The grocery store. I have never been to it. How does it stack up to, say, an H-E-B?
I mean, it's not quite an H-E-B, but, I mean, what is, you know?
Nothing. H-E-B, that's it.
But I've been going to this Old Smith's that's the closest grocery store to my apartment. There's this Old Smith's that the Smith's Corporation no longer gives a shit about, and it's plain to see. And I go into Winco, and everything's clean, and everything's cheap, and the deli ladies are friendly. They got good crab.
How is their marketing?
They don't really have any. It's a co-op, you know? They're just like, hey, it's Winco. Stuff's cheap here.
I think the last time I really felt marketed to, I was... God, this may have even been the trip that we went to Telluride. But I was staying in a hotel, and it was off-brand from the hotels I usually stay at. I have no actual brand preference, with the exception that Motel 6 used to give you a wake-up call from Tom Baudette.
We'll leave the light on for you.
And I used to enjoy that.
Do not act like you do not enjoy that DoubleTree cookie.
I want the cheapest room possible and not get bed bugs. My hotels are for sleeping and that's it, so why get fancy? But the last time I stayed in a chain that will remain nameless, that I had never stayed at before, as I'm going to bed, I notice that the soap and shampoo collection are all very artisanally presented. Like there is both a face bar and a body bar. The face bar is charcoal based. The body bar is wrapped in like brown paper. And then we have body wash, lotion, shampoo, and conditioner that all have, you know, interesting labels that are drawn by people who they feel artistic and they come from some place that's called Dr. Phantasm Q Republic's Soapinasium, something along those lines. And I'm like, wow, these guys like really went all out. They got some artisanal soaps from some fancy soap dealer. Like, if a maid's card is left unattended, I might descend on this thing. You know, this stuff looks nice. And it worked on me. I was like, man, maybe I should start staying at these places just for the artisanal soaps. But then I actually sat down and read the label. And it's not from some, like, independent soap company who scored this amazing contract with this hotel chain. The company is just a subsidiary of the hotel chain. And they have branded these things to look artisanal. And then when I used them the next morning, actually in practice, they weren't very good. As a matter of fact, the shampoo both smelled exactly like, had the consistency of, and lathered just like lemon-scented dish detergent. And I'm not too proud to say that I haven't washed my hair with dish detergent this year. So I know what that's like, and I was so disgusted by it that I left all of the soaps and stuff there, which is saying something for me, because even the cheap shampoos and conditioners, I'll usually swipe, throw in my bag, because hey, free shampoo and conditioner. Hold on to it in case of emergencies for when you run out. But I was actually so upset and I felt so betrayed by this marketing that I actually just left them there, and I don't know that I'll ever stay at one of those hotels again. I just felt deeply betrayed by that marketing.
Hey, Trevor.
Uh-huh.
Is this a bit for the podcast?
It can be.
Did you want to do it after the slate?
Well, go ahead.
I lost you completely.
Yeah, I hit mute instead of speaker. I'm an idiot. Okay, go ahead.
Official Harley Bop Comet episode, John Chick. Harley Prey and the Birds of Way. Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, Birds of Harley Prey, Harley Birds.
The Emancipation of Harley Quinn, or the Incredible Emancipation of Harley. What was the full title on?
Something, 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 Harley Quinn.
No, try again.
What is it really? I've done the bit so much I've lost it.
Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Thank God they broke the mold when they made that one.
I think it was just then renamed Harley Quinn: Birds of Prey.
Oh, well, that's not as good.
No.
I thought I hated it, but I guess I like it when they take it away. No, man, those are my Brussels sprouts. Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1.
I never knew romance had ended until you poisoned my food, and I thought it was a lark when you kicked me in the park, but now I think it was rude.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I am bogged beyond recall.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Now, there's only two of us here tonight, and we're going to lock ourselves in my room.
Men drilling by night, underground meeting places, pagan rituals. Well, anything's possible.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for folks who like to stay up late at night and talk movies over piping hot cups of coffee and piping hot slices of pie, maybe with an ice-cold scoop of vanilla ice cream on the side. But that's up to you. It's a conceptual diner. It's not real. We are social distancing through the magic of podcasting, but in the conceptual diner, COVID is non-viral. But in the diner with me, across the booth, as it were, is my co-host, as always.
Hey, it's me. It's Matt is my name, I think.
I am your other co-host, Trevor T. Trujillo, and I am a film critic. I am a journalist. I wear many hats. Matt is a film critic. He's a stand-up comic. He wears many hats. And we're here to talk about some films with you. One movie in particular. I don't know why we didn't cover this when it came out. It may have been that I just didn't see it right away. But this is one that we feel has been unfairly
maligned.
Yeah, unfairly treated by not necessarily other critics. I think it was pretty well critically well reviewed, but the user base on this, we're just gonna have to agree to disagree, but we're gonna disagree with about 40% of the fan base here, according to IMDb. So we're gonna be talking about Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. DCEU, DCCU, what the hell is the acronym for the cinematic DC Universe? Warner Brothers and DC have so many different pots simmering right now, and some of them are being well managed, it seems. Some of them are not, but we'll get into that in a bit. Matt, what have you been watching lately?
Just bad horror movies, mostly, as I stay up endlessly till 3 or 4 in the morning. I watched Nomadland with you.
Yeah, what'd you think of Nomadland?
I liked it. I thought it was kind of sad but understated.
Is it? Because
I don't know.
That was the I strapped into that movie, ready for it to depress the hell out of me. But really, the whole movie, everybody is supportive, with the exception of like one or two characters, very briefly, that are not dwelt on. Now she dwells on it, and that's the beauty of this movie, is that Frances McDormand is a powerhouse performer, world treasure of a performer. All of the conflict in this movie is eternal. So she's wrestling with it, not verbally, it's not spoken, but you can see this performance and these ideas and these things happening right behind her eyes. Otherwise, the movie is just, it's about a person finding a supportive community that they really enjoy. So by the end of the movie, I was not nearly as depressed as I thought I'd be. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I co-sign this message. what else? I've been watching Resident Alien.
Which one is that? Is that the Justin Roiland, it's like Rick and Morty, but not?
No, that is Solar Opposites. Resident Alien is Alien, who is played by Alan Tudyk.
Oh, okay.
Has crash-landed in the mountains of Colorado. He simulates the physical form of the first human he encounters, who turns out to be the town doctor, and then he must improvise being the town doctor, which he's not terribly inclined to, because his species is kind of like predatory and gross. So it's sort of like, it's like if a member of the Addams family was the main character in Northern Exposure.
Sold.
This almost rises to the level of like a criticism, but his inner monologue is kind of like, imagine, you know, those Z Frank videos about like the life of a cuttlefish or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Facts about kittens.
Right, right.
It's that tone, but he's like discussing humans. And it's got some cool supporting casts, and it's got some nice trope subversion, you know? There's a native family in it that are just like pleasant and own a business and don't have any problems, you know? You know?
Yeah.
Kind of actually segueing to our main entree here, it kind of reminds me of Harley Quinn because it has some relatively odious shit happens in it, but it is still very light in tone.
Excuse me, sir. You Dr. Harry Van Der Spiegel?
What can I help you with?
We had ourselves a murder in town last night. You're a doctor. We need you to come down and take a look at the body. Doctor?
This is awesome. A good mystery, figuring out what happened. Like Law and Order. Kung, kung.
All right, look, that's one creepy some bitch. Y'all see that, right?
I have to prove I fit in, that I'm normal like them.
What the hell?
There's something wrong with that man.
Who even are you, Harry Van Der Spiegel?
Just a normal human.
This town looks like a slice of Americana, but trust me, it has an underbelly.
My son told me you're an alien.
Well, you don't have anything to worry about. I'm not an alien. Thank you for coming over.
There is a killer out there.
I can help. I'm a good doctor. I'm never wrong.
We strongly believe the body washed up on the beach.
How do you know that?
Because I can feel it in my balls.
Well, and I checked the currents. So the currents and the sheriff's balls.
So I finally sat down via HBO Max. It's a TNT series, but HBO Max picked up season one of Snowpiercer. I think they're into their second season now, which I have not watched. But I did sit down and watch season one. I loved the movie. Bong Joon-ho, the guy who brought you the Oscar-winning Parasite, he's himself a multiple Oscar winner in one night, a favorite of Fantastic Fest, the namesake of the Alamo Drafthouse Theater on South Lamar, Bong Joon-ho. Great movie, an allegory for class. It's an American English language film. It stars Chris Evans. Ed Harris, I believe, is in it for a bit.
And all that is true, and Snowpiercer the movie is great, but Snowpiercer the series is better. Who's not afraid of hot takes? This guy.
No, I'll say it's probably better. Like, there's part of me that when I'm showing this to people, I'm like, all right, have you seen the movie? Because I don't know whether I should show that to them first, because this is definitely a standalone story, a different take on the material. Bong Joon-ho is an executive producer on the series, but they both pull their source material from a comic book, which I have not read. But this series is fantastic. It's got a great cast. I think it plays with the ideas presented in the movie very well, and I think the series format gives them a lot more room to not only encode some of the subtext of the film and better handle it, but also it's a better exploration of the world they built, I think.
Oh yeah, and David Diggs is the lead
of Hamilton fame.
Andre Layton is his
yeah,
name.
Yeah, in the series.
He's just dismayingly militant. At one point, he looks the people that run the train in the eye and says, this train is a fortress to class. You know, he just comes out directly. Like they are pretty open with it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you'll know within the first couple of episodes if you'll be able to handle it. Like, this is a show that does not pull punches on its... I'm not going to say it gets right down to GOP versus Democrats, but there is definitely a populist politic to it that it's not ashamed of.
It's more regressed to like the World War II era, really, because like they even get into like they have a car called the Night Car, which is the sort of entertainment and release for the passengers. It is essentially a car where it is always Cabaret Berlin, and they explore, like, they replicate the politics of Cabaret Berlin on the night car, inadvertently, as it were.
We talked about this in the appropriate episode. It's a little like Rick's Place at Casablanca. It's the one place that is open to first, second, and third class. We're doing a bad job of synopsizing this series, but basically, it's the end of the world. The world is frozen. The only people who are surviving are on a luxury bullet train that is circling the globe.
Attention all passengers. Wilford Industries wishes you good morning.
The temperature outside is minus 119.6 degrees Celsius. We are 7 years, 8 months, and 13 days from departure.
Mr. Wilford runs our train based on three principles. Work, honor, and order.
People up train, shoved us down here to fend for ourselves.
Never forget who you are.
A tailie.
Our fortunes built this train, and Mr. Wilford is losing control.
They keep pushing, and it's time we push back.
There's an idea traveling up train. It wants to set the train ablaze. And all it needs is a spark.
The device, like the rationale for it being a train, is not something you're going to want to get hung up on. but that's not really the point. The point is it's a society in a bottle, and the stakes are high.
And David Diggs is amazing. To say nothing of his foil in this series, who is Jennifer Connelly, who plays the figurehead of the train, the public-facing side of the train, and maintaining the class division and the order. They, again, have, in this case, for the series, made that role a lot more complex, which I enjoy. And Jennifer Connelly, I've been a fan of her since Labyrinth. She's one of those actresses that I feel like I've grown up with, so I'm very fond of her just as a vague idea. And she's great in this. She is able to play those complexities very well.
What they do with the whole season, too. Like, Roche and Till, the two, they're called brakemen, but they're essentially the police.
Mike O'Malley and Sting's daughter.
Yeah, who are a set of remarkable character actors that play these two really cool cops with this very interesting dynamic where...
Mickey Sumner is her name, by the way.
They do a lot with a little... It's a neat show, and how they set up season two is cool. And there's some stuff like the breachers, the guys that they put on like steampunk cold suits and they go outside the train to work on the outside. The head breacher is this crazy heroic figure. He's like a, they found some guy that's right out of like just a, like a Leninist poster. Like and he's very lionized because it's like the hardest job on the train, and he's master tradesman on the train. And then you kind of notice that he's more about drinking the beer after. Sometimes. Yeah. moving on to our main entree here, Snowpiercer is not getting the world's best reviews on the old tomato meter audience score. And the number one complaint is that people just don't like the lead and just don't buy him.
I don't know why. The guy is a Tony Award winning actor. He's not only is he doing fine, he's doing very well. I don't get the complaint.
Yeah.
something that we're not particularly qualified to discuss, something that is very real.
We're just going to pretend we don't know why, so that we can stay up here on the edge of the pool, not step off into the deep end and ruin your night.
It's a show about politics.
But
that show, not this show. This show's about movies. And luckily, tonight, as we mentioned, we're going to be talking about another property that we feel was a little underserved by the audience. Man, do we want to go in swinging like that? Yeah, it, let's do it. So we're going to be discussing Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. I guess this...
Later stylized as Live, Die, Repeat.
Ha! And, you know, it had a title problem. Like, the branding on this changed. And we'll talk about that. I feel like that may be the answer to some of our head scratching about this, which is not a surprise to you. We discussed this before, but discussing with our audience present at the table with us. Matt, do you want to take a stab at, I guess, a brief synopsis here?
A loose sequel to The Suicide Squad? Or pardon me, to Suicide Squad. That though makes a big difference, I gather.
Yeah.
It follows Harley Quinn as she recovers emotionally from her breakup with the Joker, becomes embroiled with the struggle against another supervillain, and encounters a team of lovable lady misfits who form the bones of the team that will go on to become the Birds of Prey.
Made popular by the DC line of comic books. And actually, if my memory serves, Matt, now I know Harley Quinn, this is true, and I am 99.9% true this is true of Renee Montoya as well. Both originated from the 90s Batman the Animated Series. Bruce Timm and Paul Dini.
To whom we owe much.
Yes, and they have now become adopted into the comic book canon and have become fan favorite characters for some. But yeah, anyways, synopsis. Sorry. Ragtag group of the Birds of Prey.
Their interests converge as they struggle to locate the Bertinelli MacGuffin. The Bertinelli Diamond. An object of immense value for multiple reasons. Sentimental, financial, and then, of course, because it's a big diamond.
Can I help you?
Why, yes. Yes, you can. I'm here to report a terrible crime.
And what terrible crime is that?
This one. Nah, I told this all wrong. Quick history lesson. This all started when the Joker and I broke up. It was completely mutual. And soon enough, I was back on my feet, ready to embrace the fierce goddess within.
It's oh. So quiet.
Now that I cut ties with Mr. J, I'm about to learn that a lot of people want me dead.
All alone.
And at the top of that list is this guy.
I'm so peaceful.
But it turns out that wasn't the only dame in Gotham looking for emancipation.
You fall in love.
He's after all of us. The kid just robbed him. You betrayed him. You killed his BFF.
What?
You are so cool.
You never.
And you're dumb enough to be building a case against him. So, unless we all want to die very unpleasant death, we're gonna have to work together.
Sure.
Psychologically speaking, vengeance rarely brings the catharsis we hope for.
Yeah.
Are we ready?
You blow up fuse,
turn it up!
In the process, we make friends along the way, we buy a hyena, and we break no less than 12 legs.
Yeah, you were running a broken leg count during this particular viewing. Is 12 the official count?
Well, it's dodgy because I counted one that was like a good hard, like where she kind of slides into home and hits a guy in the shin.
Yeah.
And there are a couple I didn't count that I decided were mere trips and foot sweeps and stuff where nothing was broken.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe there were a good solid 12 strikes to the legs in this that made me go,
Now, is that 12 legs or 12 pairs of legs?
That is 12 individual legs. I counted two clicks if she did something twice to one person.
Aha.
Although I did not count the one where she breaks the guy's right leg, then breaks his left leg, then hits his broken left leg again the other way. As three. I only counted it as two because I was like, that leg was already broken, sis.
These characters all have an interest in this diamond. I think they're very skillfully brought together. They're going up against a common DC bad guy, the Black Mask, also known as... Sionis is his last name, but what is his full... Roman Sionis. Romy.
Yeah, Roman. Romy.
Yeah, she calls him Romy throughout the whole movie. I should have known that. But yeah, Roman Sionis, who's played pretty skillfully by Ewan McGregor. Folks, we're not going to have a spoiler curtain on this. This movie is currently available as part of the HBO Max package, if that's something you have. The movie itself is about a year old at this point, maybe a little more. It's a comic book movie. It's pretty for color. It's very violent. It earns its R rating. But this is one you're probably going to watch before we continue the discussion.
Finally, actually, on this watch through, we watched this once and then we kind of kicked the episode down the road. So we watched it again tonight before we recorded. I have to say, on this watch through, I finally figured out what Ewan McGregor was doing. He's sincerely evil Joe Bluth. These are my things.
I've made a huge bounty.
But yeah, Sionis slash Black Mask, he's a strange character because he is a billionaire scion who got kicked out of his family kind of for deviance and indolence. And so his motivation for starting a mafia is to like prove that he's got drive and moxie. I really hope that this character is not based on Armie Hammer.
Oh, dude. Too soon.
How do they expect him to not be messed up when they named him Armand Hammer? No. You don't name a kid a pun and then give him $1 billion. He's going to do bad. And I don't mean he's not going to do well. I mean he's going to do bad. But the main, the core of this movie, and this will get into the eventual, like, the sole available criticism. First off, this movie's a delight.
I enjoy the hell out of this.
It's a wacky, wild, occasionally blood-spattered cartoon romp. If you made John Wick a little more and mixed it with the Paul Dini Batman.
Yeah.
Like, and it's got nice, clear, wide shot stunts, like good Hong Kong style fights.
Yeah.
That you can see what the people are doing, and it at least looks like the principal actors are actually doing a lot of it. God, that scene where she walks into the police station with the bandolier of tear gas and glitter bombs, you know? I was struck again, like on this rewatch, like what the stuntmen playing cops in that. There are some full send, like the one where she shoots him in the shin and flips him all the way over. And there's another one that's just, it's kind of a judo throw. But you just see the dudes hit the marble floor and you're like, man, I hope they just put some memory foam in between his shirt and his face. You know, because I mean, there's hard crunchers in there, really well sold hits.
Yeah. You made the joke at the Slate that this is John Chick. It's the same stunt team as John Wick.
Don't we know a guy who knows a guy who knows them?
Our good friend Katie Mae Peters, who is trained at their gym. And if you want to catch an episode that we spoke to Katie, I believe that is either episode... Yeah, that was episode 102 that we talked with Katie Mae talking about her short film, The Bee. Yeah, really wonderful conversation. You should go back and listen to that one because we've also got a link to watch that short, you know, free of charge. Free 99 as part of your internet subscription package via Vimeo, but it's up there. So where I was going with this is I think the action in this is on John Wick tier. I think if you enjoyed the bone crunching, hard hitting martial arts action of John Wick, it's here. Have it. Enjoy it. It's the same. It's not as much of it. It's not as wall-to-wall action as a John Wick movie. There's some comic book stuff in here.
And it's lighter and it's slappier. Like, it's a little bit... Well, I think the best comparison is to an early Jackie Chan movie.
Oh, yeah. Good call. But I think this is something that... I don't know if it's one of those things where it didn't communicate or if some people didn't get it or maybe my read on it is wrong, but this whole movie is an exercise in an unreliable narrator. We're getting this entire movie from the perspective of Harley Quinn. We have her as narrator. We have her talking to the camera at one point, addressing the audience. It's not a Deadpool level of meta, but it is unreliable narrator, which I think is another cool trick in that bag that doesn't get played with enough and it's here. So she makes the comment when she is introducing Renee Montoya as a character that she always sounds like a cop movie. And one of the criticisms I've heard about this is they didn't take Renee Montoya seriously enough. Her character was not handled as it was in the comics. Well, this is all being told by Harley Quinn. She mentions that everything Renee Montoya says sounds like a bad cop movie. And any time that Renee Montoya is in a scene that does not have Harley Quinn present, she sounds like a cop movie. It's Harley Quinn making up the parts of the story that she was not there for and filling in the dialogue as best she can. And you are getting this story from a person who is clinically insane, who was betrothed to a mad serial killer. You have to understand this whole movie is shown through Harley colored glasses. If we were getting this story from Bruce Wayne's perspective or Batman's perspective, I think the action would have been treated a lot more dire. When somebody gets a face with a beanbag gun, it's probably going to be represented a lot differently in a Batman movie. But we're getting this through this kind of insane lens, and I think that's why this movie works. It's able to step away tonally from what we had set up in Suicide Squad.
Then the other thing that I kind of like, you know, the word emancipation is in the title, right? This movie's supposed to be about Harley actually getting away from the Joker. And now I have a pet theory that there was at some point a version of this movie where the Joker was the villain.
Right, and I think I agree with you there.
Black Mask and Joker are very similar power levels, and they have the final fight is in the Booby Trap, which is a club that used to be the Joker and Harley's hangout. So it's a circus themed club, and some other stuff's going on there. But I think it was a real early version, and I don't think it was the wrong choice to cut him out of it and have him be just schlepped off screen. Also, I got a shout out. This is another one where he's not perhaps given the full supervillain gravitas that he has in the comics. But what's the guy's name? Chris Miller, that plays Victor Zsasz?
Oh, yeah. Chris Messina.
Messina, yeah. Chris Miller, where did I get that? Victor Zsasz, Sionis's number one homeboy, and there is a little bit of are they or aren't they confirmed bachelors in this too. Their bromance might be pretty deep and wide, which is not played for laughs.
It's a thing that's there that you can deploy if you want to.
It's more part of like how fanatical and creepy Zsasz is. In the comics, he's kind of an almost Hannibal Lecter figure. Like, he's a really despicable, really hard to deal with serial killer. I believe he is mundane in terms of his, you know, superhero power level, but he gives Batman a really good run for many issues of the comic book. And here he is just sort of a mob guy, but he is a uniquely creepy mob guy. And there's kind of a thesis present. Harley Quinn, for me, is an examination vis-a-vis Suicide Squad with Will Smith and Margot Robbie, several people in the same roles, is an example of how you could just build different sandwiches and cook different lasagnas with the same kitchen full of shit.
Delicious egg sandwiches.
Yeah, oh yeah. I can't even talk about the egg sandwich right now because I'm hungry, and I'll go make like three. There's a long egg sandwich sequence here, like a pornographic egg sandwich sequence. And actually, courtesy of our friend of the show that doesn't know we exist, Binging with Babish. Binging with Babish made the egg sandwich, and part of the reason that it's so golden and, to borrow one of his bingo card words, unctuous, is because it's duck eggs, because Margot Robbie is allergic to regular eggs. And that's my Cliff Clavin fact of the episode.
But you were saying this is the superior of the two egg sandwiches made with the same ingredients.
Well, vastly. And it's because there's a scene where, like, Sionis, who owns a nightclub that is his, you know, cover for his cash or whatever, he makes like a woman dance on a table and then makes her boyfriend strip her in public.
Yeah.
And if Zack Snyder or Brett Ratner had shot that scene, it would have been insufferable and gross and focused on the woman's boobs being out. And in this movie, it actually hammers home that, like, oh, Victor and Roman are not just whimsical rich guys playing at crime. They're shitty. Like, they're shitty. They're bad partners. They're dangerous people. They're sociopaths. Little nuances like that. Watch the whole review that was actually focused on her costume design, on how it looked like something like a person post-breakup shopping out of thrift stores would put together for themselves. And it's consistent with the lookbook that she's had throughout the DC universe, right? She still has her little bit of motley, like the clown stuff. And she also has clearly whimsical instruments, but it comes across like, remember when Lady Gaga used to make crazy shit? Like, use use Pepsi cans for hair rollers and stuff. Like, she's got a charm bracelet, and if you look at it carefully, it's not commercial charms, it's things she's found. And she wears sleeves that are made from like pom-pom and tinsel, and you're like, oh, this is a crazy person. Like, she's operating on the level of a particularly advanced crow. like this is someone that really does have lapses in judgment. And her characterization meanders throughout the movie, because she's canonically post-college educated. She was originally a doctor at Arkham Asylum that the Joker suborned, right? And so she will have these like precocious seeming moments, and you realize like, oh no, that's not precocious. That's not her being out of character for Harley Quinn. That is Harlene Quinzel having a lucid moment and even kind of playing with it and leaning into the fact that she knows it's not going to last, that she's got like 5 seconds of genius before she does something baddie again. And I don't know. I thought it worked really well. It embarrassed Suicide Squad.
Yeah. You showed me a review from somebody, and I wish I could credit them, but talking about the costumes and how much more practical Harley Quinn's costume is in this than in Suicide Squad, which is, let's face it, very cheesecake. Now, I didn't make a huge complaint about that. Margot Robbie is a very attractive woman, but let's call it what it was. It was cheesecake. And this, the costumes here are attractive, but she never felt particularly on display.
They're all wearing cute in this.
Yeah.
Like, it's midriffy. There's décolletage. There's a hell of a lot of Renee Montoya's décolletage at one point, right? Which is lampshaded in the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not just having a picky moment.
I am. Rosie Perez is a good-looking woman. Bless her. But
the tone is just different. I just think it was in the hands of a more deft director.
Agreed.
Or more deft editor, or maybe both.
Well, this one just seemed to have more going on. It seemed to have more teeth to it. One of my biggest complaints about Suicide Squad is you have Margot Robbie in there being amazing at Harley Quinn, this very popular character, and they didn't give her all this great spaghetti, and you didn't put any shit on it. You know, you gave her nothing to do with all these metahuman superpowered people. Here she's dealing with street level thugs, and I like to subscribe to your theory, Matt. I think there was a version of this story either at the pitch, at conception, a draft. I don't know the history of the writing of this, but I do think there's probably a seed of Joker in here. I think Ewan McGregor, after watching this, would have made a fantastic Joker. He's almost on a Mark Hamill level in this, which is fine because the Joker for this universe is Jared Leto. And I want to say there's probably some politic in the fact that they didn't include him in this. There seemed to be a lot of shade thrown at some of the other movies, just very, very subtly in this. Now, maybe I'm reading too much. The fact that there is no Joker, I think, is one of the movie's biggest strengths.
At one point, when she's on one of her expositional rambles, she says something about like, that was after I broke out of prison, got thrown back in prison, got broken out of prison, saved the world with a bomb on my neck, got nothing out of that.
And yeah,
you know, she just keeps rolling, you know.
That was a huge criticism that people had of Suicide Squad that I don't even think we talked about, is that Harley Quinn has this moment of, I don't need the Joker anymore, I am my own person, and then the movie ends with the Joker breaking her out of prison and her running back into his arms, and people thought that was not the character that was built during the rest of the film. And this movie makes up for that. I thought Jared Leto's Joker was fine. I'm just not a big fan of Jared Leto as a personality.
I liked him in Fight Club.
Yeah. And so I can do without him. And honestly, I have had so much Joker at this point. I can do without the Joker. And since this movie is about how Harley Quinn does not need to be a sidekick, we can address Joker as part of her backstory and never have to use him again. And I'm perfectly okay with that.
Hi, I'm Kirk Linger.
And I'm Alan Barber, and we're the hosts of a new podcast called You've Never Heard This?
Each week, Alan and I pick an album that is beloved by one and unfamiliar to the other.
We discuss the album track by track, going into band bios, inspirations for the song, or why the band means so ding-dang much to us.
Join us every Tuesday as we bring you this steamy, musical love stew.
You've Never Heard This is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or basically any other old place you can think of.
I don't care what it takes. I want my diamond back.
We're working on it. Now let's go have a Hiya, Romy.
Do you know why you're here?
When it comes to me and Roman Sionis, there are a lot of possible answers to this question.
Breaking his driver's legs.
There's that time I killed it in having a vagina in the first place. This is this
burning because I need a new life. Or to call them Romans and Jack Jackie into it, stuck in a cold tea. Like
I'm doing right now. You're here.
Oh, God, stop. You're gonna do that thing where you open up a weird ass case of torture devices while inexplicably detailing your master plan and how I don't fit into it.
I'm building a better...
Seriously, you don't have to. Really?
You're building a criminal empire because Daddy kicked you out of Janus Corp, and you think this is a big fuck you, but in actuality, it's a very misguided attempt to win back his respect.
I get it. You're really not as complicated as you think.
And you're really not as clever as you think, because now I'm gonna...
Christmas. Now you're gonna say that you want to kill me to set an example. Christ, you're boring.
I want to kill you.
Shit.
Because without the Joker around, I can't. For all your noise and bluster, you're just a silly little girl with no one around to protect her.
Whoa, wait!
What?
Don't kill me.
Ah, right.
No, seriously. Romy. Come on, there's gonna be something we can figure out. Hey! Where were you? You lost something, right? You lost something, I heard you say it. A diamond. I'm starting up my own business. See what it says, second from the bottom. I know the East End better than anybody. You want this diamond back? I'm your gal. Missy J once lost a rare photograph of a nude Eleanor Roosevelt, and I found it in a bird's nest in Robinson Park. If you let me go, just for now, I'll get you that rock back. What have you got to lose? If you boys find it first, swear to God, you can kill me later. Pinky swear. Cross my heart, hold to fire.
You're so tiresome.
If you want my mercy, shut that hole in the middle of your face and listen. You're gonna get me my diamond, and my diamond, and my diamond.
A kiss on the hand, maybe quite continental. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the autumn rack.
Speaking of another point of contrast with Suicide Squad, this has a really good score.
Yeah, well, soundtrack. Yeah.
There is pop music in this, but it's deftly covered and deftly incorporated, and they don't do the Zack Snyder stop while we play
Come Together.
While we play like Born on the Bayou or something.
Everybody knows.
What do they use? They use a really cool kind of drone cover of
Hit Me With Your Best Shot. Yeah.
That's nicely deployed.
Can I make a confession?
Go for it.
It's a big trend, especially in trailers, to use those kind of dirgy versions of pop songs. And I know it's to the point now where it gets kind of an eye roll when people do it. And I did it with one of the more recent Zack Snyder cut of Justice League trailers, I think. I kind of like those covers.
Hit me with your best shot. Why don't you hit me with your best shot? Hit me with your best shot.
There's a scene where Harley is exposed to cocaine, and it is expressed via Black Betty.
Yeah!
When pop music is deployed in this, it's like during a scene when people aren't talking, and it's appropriate. Black Betty is something you play when you're about to have like a montage of things happening in tempo with Black Betty, which is fast. You know, the Fire Away cover happens when during a
the Hit Me With Your Best Shot cover.
Yeah, it happens during a momentum break in the movie, like a drop in the movie. Everybody is, you know, doing logistics to get to the finale. They use it for like a strapping on your weapons and preparing montage, you know. They don't stop the movie to play the music. And also, Journey Smollett plays Black Canary.
Yeah.
I don't know if she sang it herself, but there's a cover of It's a Man's World in this.
Really good.
That is super. And like just generally all the incorporation of pop works here. And it's actually probably because they use less singular covers of all of it. Like I'm a reluctant defender of the Watchmen movie. I liked it more than I didn't like it. I liked it more than a lot of people liked it. But you're kind of stopping the movie to listen to Bob Dylan at a couple points in that. They avoided that here, and the whole movie like flows nicely. There's a couple little refractory periods, just long enough to run to the bathroom or something. But by and large, this movie keeps you in your chair.
And I don't think it's Citizen Kane. I don't think it's high art when we discuss the movies.
I have to say, though, there is a Citizen Kane-like scene where they talk about, like, and I appreciated it more having watched Citizen Kane. Uh-huh. Sionis is a rich person that does not know what to do with his money.
Yeah.
Like there is actually a prolonged scene that characterizes him. Like he's showing it off his art collection and, you know, I got this on safari in the Congo. Have you ever been? And Black Canary looks at him and she's like, no, I've never been there. What's it like? He's like, it's dirty.
Yeah.
And moves on with what he was, you know. And they give him enough interesting tics and stuff. And he has a little like that scene, the scene where he makes the girl dance on the table, like when he does the 1, 2, 3, 4 for her to like start dancing. Just his mannerism is actually really creepy. He's a pretty gross villain in it. And the banality of his motivation, some people criticize that. And I thought it really worked because it makes him more sociopathic. Like they make it very clear that he does not have to do this to eat and never has. Like he's not a guy that actually worked his way up from the bottom. He's a crazy rich kid, but kind of like Christian Bale's crazy rich kid in the Shaft remake. He's a crazy rich kid with some grit and some genuine sociopathy. And he makes a creepy villain. The last fight in this in the funhouse is just flight of fancy.
Yeah.
There's stuff that happens in it. Like, I noticed this time that there is a part where it's right before Harley Quinn roller skates back into frame and somebody goes, when did she have time to change her shoes?
Yeah.
But there's a part, it's not even foreground action, but in the background, you just see Harley is like fighting 6 guys on a slack line. And every time she like bounces or does something gymnastic, you can see that she's just having a ball.
Yeah.
And like, there's lots of little touches like that in it that are just make it a hoot. I do have a few cons. It's a little overstuffed and there's not quite enough Huntress in it.
Yeah, because I loved Mary Elizabeth Winstead's socially awkward Huntress. Can't quite get her superhero patter down right. And it's another one of those things where she just had interesting character tics and she's a badass. Like the badassness of her character is not what defines the character. And I appreciate
it. She has the murder stuff down, but the rest.
Do you know who I am? Do you know who I am?
Still a work in progress.
Do you know who I am?
The crossbow killer.
They call me
the crossbow killer.
They call me
the crossbow killer.
They call me Huntress.
She calls herself Huntress. Fabulous, if you ask me.
Now, here's the problem. You have Mary Elizabeth Winstead burning it up as Huntress. You have Journey Smollett killing it as Black Canary. Just a smoky songstress, streetwise, badass. She does a couple of drop kicks in here that made me ache.
Well, and we also get into Black Canary is technically a metahuman with sonic powers.
Uh-huh, that she deploys once.
I think this is canonically correct. She's the second Black Canary, and at this point in her character arc, does not have full control of her abilities, and they exhaust her. So she, at one point, when it appears force is overwhelming, she has just enough of a MacGuffin to rebalance the scales and get it back down to Harley versus Sionis. taking herself and a lot of extras out of play all at once.
And then Rosie Perez has some good screen time here, and I think I loved watching Renee Montoya. But I think for as much as those three characters, Montoya, Black Canary, and Huntress, make up the Birds of Prey, the complaint I hear the most, where it's not political, is that people wanted a Birds of Prey movie, and the Birds of Prey themselves as characters were underutilized. And as a criticism, I can't argue with that. If you came in wanting a Birds of Prey movie, you probably did not get the movie you wanted. And I think that's a marketing issue. I think Warner Brothers kind of screwed the pooch calling this a Birds of Prey movie. I don't know if it was cold feet on whether or not Harley Quinn could sell a film. I don't know why you would have cold feet about that. She's one of the most popular characters in the DC universe right now.
Yeah, she single-handedly kept Suicide Squad from flopping. Nobody went to that for Killer Croc. See, I'm kind of with you because this is sort of a question of like, okay, so it wasn't what you thought you bought, but when you got it home, does it work?
Right.
And I have to say, if they had called this The Fabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn and done the Birds of Prey thing as a giant Nick Fury cameo,
right,
everybody would have walked out of it going, holy shit, they set up Birds of Prey.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know, like, is it really worth downvoting the movie online because they put colon Birds of Prey at the end?
Or Birds of Prey colon at the beginning? Depending on which version of the title you're dealing with.
Or hear me out, Groundhog Slay.
This is just kind of an overall complaint, but one of the specific things that I have heard this, I don't know how widespread this criticism is. Matt, I have to confess, I am not a diehard Birds of Prey property fan. You know, my interest in the Batman oeuvre has been the feature films, some of the comics in the 90s, a little bit in the early 2000s with the comics, but really I have not been keeping up. And I'm especially not keeping up with the spin-off properties. So I did not know that Cassandra Cain was a character from comics and was handled in a completely different manner than she was from the comics. General complaint I hear is that the characters were not treated as they were in the comics, specifically Cassandra Cain.
Yeah, Cassandra Cain is the most changed for this movie. The Cassandra Cain character in this is in name only. Cassandra Cain, I believe she's the daughter of Lady Shiva, and she is a elite assassin raised to be a human weapon, kind of
mute, isn't she?
Almost, she's not medically so, but she's been essentially raised by wolves and socialized so poorly that she almost never speaks. And she was Batgirl for a while, and the Batgirl arc she's on, she was the darkest, most badass Batwoman that they had done in a while.
Batgirl, yeah. Wasn't she the Batgirl during that giant Arkham Asylum is spread out to Gotham as an island story arc they did?
No Man's Land,
yeah.
I think she was. And then later, she gives up the mantle of Batgirl, and I think they called her Black Bat for a while, and I think now she's called the Orphan. That is another problem, that if this was to be a dead-ass Birds of Prey movie, it should have Barbara Gordon in it, who is, after her paralyzing at the hand of the Joker, called the Oracle. She's kind of the ultimate command center tech person for Gotham superheroes.
Batman, Robin.
From time to time, Batman and the Justice League, you know. So she's entirely absent here. Sort of is a con against it in terms of it being a Birds of Prey movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like I said, I just wasn't hung up on that. I was kind of expecting it to be a Harley-centered movie in the first place.
Right.
That didn't make me sad enough to ruin my good time.
No, and as much as Cassandra Cain may not have been a silly putty lift from the comic, she's fun. Like, the actress, Ella J. Basco, gives her a lot of character, and she's funny and awkward and young and a fantastic pickpocket. She's smart alecky. She's a younger actress who is not, I actually don't know how old she is, but she's a younger actress who is not obnoxious to watch on screen, which is great. And she gets right in there with Margot Robbie. She gets right in there with Jurnee Smollett. And, you know, she punches in the class. She keeps right up with them. It may not be Batgirl from the comics, and if that's what you wanted, I have no answer for that criticism other than you're right. But again, I'm not a huge fan of the property. I came into this fairly open-minded, and I enjoyed my entire time. I enjoyed Cassandra Cain. I enjoyed Black Canary. I enjoyed Huntress. I really enjoyed Huntress. Like you said, I think my complaint is that I would have liked more Huntress, and I want this movie to have done well so we can get more. But I just, this opens up the whole can of worms that I just don't know how well Warner Brothers has managed the DC Cinematic Universe, and I don't know if that's a kettle of fish we want to get into right now, but I will say that Birds of Prey, the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn, is my favorite DC movie since Man of Steel kicked off this particular chapter
I don't know. Wonder Woman 1, though?
Wonder Woman 1 was good, but this, I just had more fun with this.
I really liked Aquaman, too, and I think it's a little slept on.
You know, I didn't see Aquaman, and I probably should have, you know, just given my feelings for Jason Momoa.
Sploosh! It did well, and it doesn't make sense. There is a snorks factor, like, you're like, how's all this happening underwater, you know? Like, how'd they go to the bathroom, you know? But at the same time, it's basically a big dumb space opera, but it's a big dumb underwater opera.
Okay.
And who is it? The guy from the Conjuring movies is Aquaman's rival within Atlantean society. I wouldn't call him the bad guy in the movie, but he is Aquaman's foil at court, and he's a hoot in it. There's some crazy visual stuff in it. I splurged on an IMAX ticket for it because I'm that guy.
Yeah.
When they really get down to third act business, there is some crazy, almost Lovecraftian horrors from the deep and stuff in it. It actually goes to like an open field battle, like Lord of the Rings level kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not really like Aquaman just like punching Black Manta. But speaking of which, I liked their take on Black Manta.
Is it as good as Young Justice take on Black Manta?
Not quite.
And that's what I will say is I think a lot of DC animated properties are fantastic. Not all of them. I've had my problems with them here and there, but I think those are usually pretty solid. And I think while I am not indulging in the Arrowverse or the CW arm of DC, even my dad is watching Arrow at this point. Like he found it on Netflix and he's going through it. And so they're doing something right. And I just don't know why the DC films don't seem to stick. Because we've had all of these ones where we're like, I don't know how I felt about it. Like I don't know that we've reviewed one that we particularly enjoyed on the podcast. But this one is a delight and nobody cared.
Then the other thing I think, and people talk about, like, how come Marvel versus DC, and why do you guys hate the DC movies, and does Marvel just send you money in a manila envelope? I think one thing that's going on with DC is there's a lot of competition in the DC universe. And so people have their favorite, like some people are very into the Alan Moore Swamp Thing, and some people like the Adrian Barbeau Corman Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole conversation about Joel Schumacher, who said, well, my Batman was the newspaper Batman, the Adam West Batman, and that's what I made a movie about.
Right.
So when I had Tommy Lee Jones and Arnold Schwarzenegger and everybody making a goofy Batman movie, I wasn't selling the property out. I was making my Batman from when I was a kid, goddammit.
And you know what? If you watch those movies with that in mind, they work so much better.
He was actually justifiably confused about why all these people that were Tim Burton fans, which is what they really were, is they'd like the Burton aesthetic from the Tim Burton Batman, you know, the Nicholson Joker. And they wanted to know, like, well, how come this isn't that? And it's kind of like, well, it just isn't. Batman's almost 100. There's 100 damn years of the first Batman was almost Perot. There's a lot of room in that continuum for different stories to be told. I think, though, about Justice League, right? I'm really worried that the people that blamed Justice League's quality problems on studio interference have talked themselves into the idea of the Snyder Cut as a fix, and they're going to say it's good. They're just going to talk themselves into believing it's good.
Kind of an episode one syndrome that first week.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I hesitate to announce my plans and hear God laugh, as Al Schwerengen would put it, but the Snyder Cut's not going to be good.
I'm not optimistic. Like, I was a big Zack Snyder fan in the early, like, the guy who can remake Dawn of the Dead and make it a good movie, the concept was just mind-blowing to me, and I'm like, yeah, I'm on board for this guy. And he was charismatic in the DVD commentary, I remember that. And then I liked 300, it was very literal to the comic book, and we had just come out of Sin City, and I was itching for a little more of that, and that delivered. I wasn't the biggest fan of Sucker Punch, and then it's just all kind of gone downhill from there. And maybe I'm talking out my ass. Maybe Zack Snyder's vision is going to be brilliant and it'll blow me away, and I hope that's true.
Well, then the other thing that I'm afraid of is that it will be good because Zack Snyder listened to a bunch of other people in this long interim that it's taken to build momentum for the Snyder Cut. So then he listens to his editor and he listens to his Lawrence Kasdan, if you will, and materializes this good recut, and then he's going to want to recut everything else he makes.
I hope not, but here's what I am hopeful for, is Zack Snyder's got that new zombie film coming out, Army of the Dead, coming out later this year with Dave Bautista and I think it's Tig Notaro. And I'm like, huh, I don't know. Like, he made a good zombie movie once upon a time. Let's try it. And so I'm cautiously optimistic, and maybe I'm just not a Zack Snyder superhero fan, you know?
But I just really want to see a buddy cop show now with the two of them.
So I don't want to end on talk about Zack Snyder. I feel kind of bad that we took some of Harley's episode to talk about Zack Snyder. But that is what I will say, is this does feel like a Harley Quinn movie. I walked in expecting a Harley Quinn movie. I got a Harley Quinn movie. I was pleased overall with it. There is no reasonable defense. It is a perfectly sound criticism that if you walked in expecting a Birds of Prey movie, you're probably let down. I have no answer for that except sorry. But at the same time, I don't think the movie suffered from not being a Birds of Prey movie. If you take the movie entirely separate from the way it was marketed and just treat it as a standalone movie, chop out the title card if you have to, it works. And it's one of those things, we talked about this a lot with the Star Wars episodes, fan expectations being the real enemy of movie quality. Is I'm sorry it wasn't what you expected, but what we got was pretty good. It was executed well, it was performed well. Margot Robbie is dynamite. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is dynamite. Journey Smollett is dynamite. Yeah, I don't get, empirically, if I were to sit here and turn my subjective argument into an objective argument, I just don't understand, other than not meeting their expectations for a Birds of Prey film, I just don't get a lot of the criticism for this.
I just liked it, and I wanted it to do good.
Yeah, me too. And I'm the same way with Snowpiercer.
There's nothing wrong with it. Stop being a dick, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to hang out to dry people who have criticisms of either one. I think you can, let's face it, the concept of Snowpiercer is ridiculous from the word go. So if you didn't buy in, once again, I don't have an answer for that criticism. I just can't help you. But, you know, there is a certain level of buy-in, and I think the level of buy-in that I gave both these properties was perfectly reasonable. I don't know. I had a good time with it, and I hate to say it, but I think a lot of the criticism, not all of it, but a lot of it is just mixed up in some bad politics.
I want more cocaine montages. I want more cocaine montages set to Black Betty. I want more cocaine montages set to Black Betty in a whimsically overfull police evidence locker where just reaching randomly into a shelf will produce Warner Brothers-like results.
I want that too, man. That's the American dream.
Now I'm going to bed because it's almost morning. Stay classy, San Diego. Oh, I hope you got that, because that was like a really loud clap and it actually hurt my fingers.
Matt, have you learned nothing? You're supposed to use two Weezer CDs.
I didn't have two Weezer CDs.
Can I just get a note to Cameron in cold storage? Christmas idea for Matt next year. Well, and I don't want to stray too far away from Birds of Prey, because, I mean, that's really what we're here to talk about.
I do. You want to talk about CPAC on mic?
Now, guys, Charlton Heston said no golden idols. No golden idols.
Let's just have a convention where they all smoke crack.
Yeah, it was scary buzz noises.
That was because I was eating a black jelly bean.
You sick bastard.
I don't like black jelly beans, but I love green poop.
This is a Hello Sweetie Podcast Network production.